Close your eyes for a second and imagine the quintessential bush aircraft of the early 1900s flying in the skies of the Yukon Territory. So what's that look like to you? That's right. It has a rotary engine, definitely, and the potential to be put on floats or on wheels. It's a monowing, yes, and its color is yellow. That's right, it's yellow, because all cool aircraft are painted yellow. Unless, of course, they're painted another color, in which they're still very cool airplanes. In keeping with the 100th anniversary of Yukon Aviation, I'd like to invite back to the show one more time Donna Clayson. She has done a report on the AAM Fokker Super Universal Airplane. On the side of this airplane, it said Royal Mail. And not M-A-Y-L, My Amazing Yukon Life, but just M-A-I-L. This aircraft was used to deliver mail through the southern parts of the Yukon Territory. It met its demise on the end of the runway in Dawson City many years ago, and it sat at the end of the runway for many years after that. It was extricated to the gold fields down by Granville, which is the terminus of Sulphur Creek and Dominion Creek. It sat in the bush there for years, until a group of people who are incredibly ambitious, have incredible perseverance and grit, got together and said, hey, let's do this. I got a good idea. Let's restore an airplane. How long is it going to take? Oh, I don't know. 5 years? 10 years? 15 years? 20 years? I kid you not. It took that long, or darn near. And this aircraft now flies. It's sitting on display currently in the Western Canadian Aviation Museum in my hometown of Winnipeg. Woohoo! And it is now one of the most ambitious projects that the territory has ever seen in aviation. But I guarantee you, there's other ones coming up. Because these people don't know when to quit. They won't quit. Gotta love them for that. So without further ado, let's cue the music and get right to it. Here we go.
Welcome to My Amazing Yukon Life Podcast. It's time now to sit back and fill your gold poke with nuggets of knowledge as we pan through stories of desperate struggle, wild adventure, love, despair, and untold fortune, recounted by those with the tenacity, determination, and grit to survive and thrive amidst the magic and mystery of Canada's Yukon. And now, your host, affectionately known as Trapper Dan, Yukon's Renaissance man, Daniel Haley.
Welcome, everyone, to My Amazing Yukon Life Podcast, episode number 15. Today, I'm joining Donna Clayson in her home just outside of Whitehorse, and we'll be speaking about the restoration of the Fokker Super Universal aircraft with the call sign of Charlie Foxtrot - Alpha Alpha Mike. Welcome back to the show, Donna. Question for you right off the top is, what exactly inspired you to write this particular article in the first place?
Well, I was writing for the Moggeson Telegraph for 15 years, and Sharon Jones wanted me to write something, and I thought, well, let's do a special. And aviation's in my heart. I've always loved aviation. And a Clarence Tingley, a friend of mine who is, I believe, one of the best aircraft mechanics ever, somebody might dispute it, but that's my opinion, mentioned it. And he said, hey, do you know anything about Alpha Alpha Mike? And I said, no. And he says, well, I think you should learn a little bit about it because it has Yukon connections. And I said, okay. So I decided that's what I'm going to write. And it took me 6 months. It took a lot of research, a lot of letters, a lot of phone calls. And Bob Cameron helped me tremendously. Many others helped me. Clarence Tingley helped me. He's passed away now. But I have noted everyone that did help me at the end of the article. And after 6 months, it was done, and I almost felt sad that it was done because I immersed myself in this article. And there's a lot of information here. It's 16 pages, double-sided. So, yeah, if you want, I can get right into it. And
sure, that'd be great. Thanks.
Okay, so the Fokker Super Universal, serial number 827, came off the production line in January 1929 in Teterboro, New Jersey. This Fokker was reconstructed using the parts of four wrecked airplanes. After an 18-year road to restoration, CFAAM, first flew on July 24th, 1998, but it took another year of proof and paperwork to gain a coveted certificate of airworthiness. The aircraft had an 8-year tour on the vintage aircraft circuit, making appearances all over North America, covering over 35,000 miles before coming home to rest at the Royal Aviation Museum of Western Canada in Winnipeg, Manitoba. The Super Universal was received enthusiastically in the marketplace, selling better than any other Fokker, America's design, some 80 aircraft, and required the company to expand its factory space to meet demand. The first production Super Universal was named the Virginia by Richard E. Byrd and taken to the Antarctic in 1928. This aircraft was damaged after being ripped from its tie-downs and thrown backwards over 1 kilometer in winds estimated to have been at least 150 miles an hour and was abandoned, although Byrd subsequently revisited it to salvage useful parts. One of the first monoplanes with a single wing, she displayed all of the qualities required in an aircraft that would spend most of its life on very rough airstrips or worse. With a 51-foot, 15.3-meter wingspan and very thick wing root, the Fokker Super Universal was both responsive and stable. One of the features that made it possible to use rough landing spots without knocking the plane apart was an ingenious shock absorber consisting of a length of bungee cord seen at the top of the strut. The 29 Fokker Super Universal was one of 80 that were built in the Fokker plant in New Jersey, costing $22,450 in 1929, making it worth more than 80 Ford cars. Coming from the factory, it was painted blue with varnished wood wings. The plane is powered by a 9-cylinder, 410-horsepower Pratt & Whitney engine, carries 150 gallons of fuel, enough for about 6 hours of flying with a cruising speed of about 100 miles an hour. The propeller is a 9-foot adjustable metal. The plane is covered with cotton fabric and has farm implement tires. Fokkers were put into service in every corner of the world, as well as exploration, freight, mail, and passenger service. In 1929, Goodyear purchased one, becoming the first company in the world to have an aircraft specifically for tire testing. CFAAM was purchased new by the Consolidated Mining and Smelting Company, Cominco, between 1929 and 1934. It was used in the company's mineral exploration program based at Trail, British Columbia, but working in remote areas throughout Canada on wheels, skis, and floats. One of the first missions assigned to CFAAM was to join in the search for a group of geologists and surveyors working for Dominion Explorers Limited. Known as the McAlpine Party, the search became one of the largest and most costly in Canadian history. The men were eventually found in the Cambridge Bay area, and AAM helped bring them to safety. In 1934, a new chapter in AAM's story began. George Simmons, who lived in Carcross, ran a fox farm and had the contract to carry the mail from Carcross to Atlin. He used boats and trucks to carry the mail in the summer and dog team in the winter, but was intrigued by the possibility of using an airplane year-round. He was able to purchase AAM from Cominco, and in October 1934, he and pilot Bob Randall traveled to Trail to pick her up. With wheels and skis stashed in the back, AAM lifted off the Columbia River and headed for Carcross as the flagship of Northern Airways Limited. She was immediately put to work hauling mail, freight, and passengers to Atlin, Mayo, Fort Selkirk, Dawson City, and many remote destinations in the Yukon and northwestern British Columbia. In the fall of 1936, the Fokker was badly damaged on Francis Lake when it hit submerged rocks. Over the following winter, though, it was repaired and flown back to Carcross. In August of 1937, AAM was flown to Vancouver, where it was professionally rebuilt, but she had only been back on the Yukon for less than 3 months when her career came to an end. As the years passed, the beautiful yellow and green Fokker became a virtually unrecognizable pile of wreckage. But in 1974, local pilots Bob Cameron and Tony Hanelick, realizing the historic significance of the aircraft, received what remained. After sitting in Cameron's yard with parts of two other Fokkers for a while, though, it also became clear what a massive undertaking a restoration would be, and the Western Canada Aviation Museum was contacted. Cameron told a White Horse Star reporter that they sent up two Air Force Hercules to fly it out, which tells you something about what they thought of the find. While reading a magazine article, Bob learned of a gentleman by the name of Clark Seaborn of Calgary, Alberta, that restored aircraft. He contacted Mr. Seaborn to discuss restoration projects, and when Clark admitted to needing another challenge, the men, along with Don McLean from Lethbridge, Alberta, combined their expertise. The museum had no definite plans to restore the plane, and after lengthy negotiations with the museum, an agreement was reached, which would allow Seaborn to restore the plane in exchange for the rights to fly it for 5 years. Clark spent 6 months doing research. He began looking for artifacts, parts, drawings, paperwork of any kind that would give clues on the plane. He was allowed access to the Federal Aviation Administration archives in California. He stated, there were 30,000 feet of paper and elastic bands in boxes and shelves. An earthquake had toppled the boxes and spilled everything. The cleanup crew had stuffed the papers back into the boxes without any semblance of order. But luckily, Clark managed to find some usable information. The men found pieces and piles of rusting plane parts tossed alongside hangars or in old buildings across Alaska, Canada, and the lower 48 states. What they couldn't find, Clark built, such as the rudder, the wing, and much more. They had skis, and Bob later found and retrieved the original floats from a lake. The most time-consuming to make was the wing. It should be noted that the Fokker had a single wing, not only in the sense that it was a monoplane, but also because it was built in one piece, typical Fokker fashion. Clark estimated it took about 4,000 hours. Narrow strips of wood had to be steamed so they would bend, and then they had to be held in place while the glue dried. The wings have 90,000 little brass nails that were put in one by one. Spacings for the nails were shown on the drawings, some as close as a quarter of an inch apart. The interior and the seats are covered with mohair, just like the original. Particular attention had to be paid to every detail, always striving for authenticity of the period, using original methods, tools, and equipment. Because the plane was like a living thing, it changed from time to time as it was fixed and patched up after accidents and incidents while working in the bush. The planes of this time in the Alaskan and Canadian wilderness were used for hauling and frequently had mishaps as they tried to land with floats on the lakes or with skis on the rough snow-covered ground. Because of the Fokker's varied and colorful history, the men had to choose a point in time and stay with it. They chose March 1935. Airplanes are a passion, said Seaborn, and this one became an obsession. Don't be discouraged, he advised, and don't let the lack of information scare you. That's part of the fun, he said of the search. It took 18 years and 10,000 hours of labor for Seaborn and aviation engineer Don McLean, along with a team of dedicated volunteers, to rebuild the plane. And on July 24th, 1998, CFAAM took to the air for the first time in 61 years. Although the Pratt & Whitney radial engine looks original, it and the repeller are replacements. On July 24th, 1998, CFAAM took to the air for the first time in 61 years. In 1999, the original registration CFAAM was reissued. Seaborn then flew off on a memorial six-year adventure, picking up a number of awards at air shows along the way. During the adventure, Clark Seaborn, Bob Cameron, and Don McLean shared crew duties. They returned to Carcross, where CFAAM had serviced Northern Airways and had a second chance to take off from Dawson City, where the aircraft had crashed in 1937. The best-known flight of the newly restored AAM occurred in 2001, in which the flight recreated the mail delivery route of the late 1930s, known as the Yukon Odyssey. I do have all the specifications. I'm not going to read them. They are available if you want. You can do a search on this as well. Among the many flights since the restoration, there have been some particularly significant ones. In Trail, AAM was photographed in front of the same hangar where she sat in the 1930s, and the late Robert Bob Randall, who, at 92 years of age, was taken up for another flight. Tourism Yukon sponsored the initiative to bring her back to the Yukon. Between June 7th and June 13th, 2001, she was flown over the same routes she had traveled 65 years previously, visiting Castlegar, Whitehorse, Fort Selkirk, Dawson City, Mayo, Atlin, and, of course, Carcross. For the first time in 64 years, a former Yukoner of sorts has returned home. Over 100 people, tourists and Yukoners alike, turned out at the Carcross Hangar Wednesday to greet the Fokker Super Universal CF AAM as it touched down on the runway and taxied to the front of the hangar. You know, with all of the things we've done with the plane, all the places we've gone, all the acclaim we get, the highlight for all three of us guys, quietly in our own minds, the highlight is Carcross. Now, this was written, the source of this was the Whitehorse Star, Thursday, June 14th, 2001, by Stephanie Waddell, titled Fokker Touches Down at Carcross. The plane is home.
And like Bob Cameron said, the highlight is Carcross.
The highlight is Carcross.
Yeah.
There's many, many pictures of AAM in the Transportation Museum in Carcross.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was home. The plane served as the territory's mail service in the 1930s under the leadership of George Simmons, a Carcross fur rancher who had been contracted to carry the mail from Carcross to Atlin by way of boats and trucks through the summer and dog teams in the winter. Simmons wanted to deliver mail year-round by air, and in 1934, he and Bob Randall, a local pilot, bought the plane from Comical in Trail, B.C. This meant that Carcross now had air service, Northern Airways Limited, which eventually began transporting mail, freight, and passengers to Dawson, Mayo, Atlin, around the territory. I remember when the mail came into town in the 1930s, reminisced John Scott in an interview as the plane circled over Carcross. Oh, here it comes, he said with a smile as the plane landed on the runway. In 1935, National Geographic used the plane as part of the first mapping expedition into St. Elias. By 1936, Northern Airways had three planes in its fleet, including two Fokkers. It was only a year later, however, that the Fokkers were damaged on rock drifts in Francis Lake. The planes were required on site through the winter and returned to Carcross, where they were put into service. Later that year in August, AAM was flown to Vancouver, where it was rebuilt and returned to Carcross in September. The plane would only remain in service for about three more months because of a crash near Dawson City. AAM began departing Dawson on a runway covered in 8 inches of fresh snow. The plane failed to reach flying speed and careened off the end of the runway, tearing off the undercarriage. The plane was stripped and abandoned at the Dawson Airport. It was nearly 40 years later, in 1974, when Bob Cameron and Tony Hanilek, another local pilot, retrieved the remains of AAM. Cameron and Clark Seaborn of Calgary later began reconstructing the plane, and in 1998, AAM flew again for the first time in over half a century. Cameron and Seaborn were joined by Don McLean, an engineer from Lethbridge, in restoring the aircraft. It's been a part of my life for over 20 years, said Seaborn in an interview yesterday after the plane landed at the Carcross hangar. The restoration took 10,000 hours of work. The Fokker began its 2001, a Yukon Odyssey, on Saturday, taking with it numerous letters when it ventured from Whitehorse to Fort Selkirk and then to Dawson. On Monday, it flew to Mayo, and on Tuesday, it ventured to Atlin before making its final journey in the Odyssey to Carcross yesterday. Throughout the journey, commemorative stamps were placed on the envelopes flown to Carcross from the various communities in this recreation of history. McLean noted that there were approximately 2,000 envelopes received on the Odyssey. It's great to be part of the Yukon's history, he said. He noted that the nicest part of the trip has been the genuine enthusiasm of the communities taking part in the event. That enthusiasm was evident in Carcross as both young and old turned out for the arrival of the Fokker. Friends such as Carol Ford and Janet Enns brought their families out and could be heard talking about the historical plane. It's actually quite neat to watch it come in and think, that's how the mail used to be delivered, said Enns. Both mothers said the families came out because their children couldn't miss the event. As the parents socialized, some of the children looked over an information display on the aircraft. "It's cool," the four of them agreed. Brent Ans was especially intrigued by the doors. "The doors inside the cockpit into where you get out was really neat," he said. "A reception wrapping up the event was held in Carcross last night." On each leg of the Yukon tour, a few envelopes known as covers to collectors were flown to commemorate AAM's mail delivery role. A cover from the White Horse Fort Selkirk leg is shown in this article. There was another article by Michael Hale, historic Yukon aircraft source again, White Horse Star, June 8, 2001. A plane built in New Jersey, flown across BC in the Yukon, taken over the St. Elias mountain range and crashed in the bush around Dawson City, is back for another run. Bob Cameron, a local plane and history buff, dragged the loaded bird out of the bush back in... Bob Cameron, a local plane and history buff, dragged the downed bird out of the bush back in 1974 and waited 24 years before seeing it rise into the air again. The Phoenix tail is being commemorated by Canada Post with special envelopes and stamps, including a historically accurate number 8 size air mile envelope with two 2-cent stamps, a copy of the original Northern Airways cachet. Northern Airways of Carcross used the Fokker to deliver mail throughout the territory and parts of northern BC in the 1930s. Cameron's dream of bringing the plane back to life hinged on the work of Calgary's Clark Seaborn, another plane buff who just happened to share Cameron's affinity for 1933 Waco UICs. The two met in the late 70s while Cameron was in Alberta at an air show. After sharing stories, Cameron and Seaborn hatched a plan to get the Fokker airborne once more. Cameron had previously contacted the Western Canadian Aviation Museum, and curators there had sent up two Air Force Hercules to haul the shell and parts from two other Fokkers down to their warehouse. Seaborn and Cameron brokered a deal whereby they, along with airplane mechanic Don McLean, would rebuild the Fokker to its original glory in exchange for 5 years of flying time. After 18 years and thousands of man-hours, the Fokker flew again for the first time on July 24, 1998. Having won awards at air shows around North America, the big yellow and green bird is back in the Yukon to relive its mail days. The Fokker was originally built at a New Jersey factory in 1929. It was used by Carcross's Northern Airways to deliver mail between Whitehorse, Carmax, Fort Selkirk, and Dawson in the mid-30s until its crash on takeoff from the Dawson airstrip on December 5, 1937. That run will be created in the coming days, beginning on Saturday morning when it will lift off from the Whitehorse Airport at 1000 hours, arriving in Fort Selkirk 90 minutes later. From there, the mono-wing plane will head for Dawson with a scheduled arrival time of 1500 hours. Mail will also get to see the plane when it touches down at noon on Monday before heading for Atlin, BC on Tuesday. Carcross will welcome the Fokker home on Wednesday with a scheduled arrival of 1600 hours. A final mail cachet and roundup reception will be held before the plane leaves the territory once again. The Fokker is on display at the Yukon Transportation Museum next to the airport until Saturday. And as related by Bob Cameron, he said, "The Fokker was the first airplane purchased by George Simmons when he started Northern Airways in Carcross in 1934. It was used on skis in support of the historic Washburn expedition into the Canadian St. Elias ice fields, as well as for numerous flights into the hinterlands, hauling freight, passengers, and mail on floats, wheels, and skis. In 1937, pilot Les Cook had an accident with it during takeoff at Dawson, and Simmons elected to strip it and abandon the remains at the Dawson City Airport. In 1974, Tony Henlock and I retrieved its scant remains out at Granville. Don't ask me how I got there. I then went out and gathered all the remains of Northern Airways' other two Fokker Super Universals, CFATJ and CFAJC, and wondered about the feasibility of reconstructing one of these historic bush planes, extinct since 1942. Enter Calgary-based aircraft restorer Clark Seaborn and aircraft maintenance engineer Don McLean. Long story short, with the help of pieces from five other Fokkers Super Universal Rex, Clark, and Dawn reconstructed old AAM, and on July 24, 1998, she took to the air again for the first time in 61 years. For the next 5 years, in the summers, Clark, Dawn, and I flew AAM all over North America, 25,000 miles, including a return to its Yukon routes and routes, R-O-O-T-S, in 2001, in which we flew commemorative air mail flights to Dawson, Mayo, Fort Selkirk, Carcross, and Atlin. Letter covers from these flights are available at the Yukon Transportation Museum. We also flew it to the Oshkosh, Wisconsin Air Show, the biggest air show in the world and won Judge's Choice, and flew in the American National Air Tour of 2003, invitation only. We were the only non-Americans invited, in which we flew 8,000 miles and visited 26 American cities with all kinds of fanfare. We also flew it in the CNA Air Show at Toronto in 2003. Today, it resides on permanent display in the Western Canada Aviation Museum in Winnipeg. We have tons more history and photos of this piece of Yukon aviation history. There's another article called Rambling by Doug Bell and called Fokker CFAAM Flew Into Our Hearts. Yukon News, June 13, 2001. When the Fokker came in and taxied onto the dirt off the ramp, I stood in the dust, turned away, fighting tears, but I didn't cry. Then I sat in it. I thought of Alex sitting up front of the controls, and Olive's voice faded into thought and left me to suspect she'd traveled 60 years into the past when her husband sat in the left front seat and flew the Fokker CFAAM around the Yukon. I thought flying on floats was the most fun. I loved the early morning flights all alone above the clouds. They were all pink. It was beautiful, just beautiful. It was June 8, 2 days after Fokker Super Universal CFAAM landed on Yukon soil again. Olive Torp, born Olive Fredrickson, and I journeyed Yukon's aviation memory lane. Yes, the Touchai was running, and Polly the Parrot reigned supreme in Carcross when we lived there, Olive recalled. You know, that bird could swear till the air was totally blue. Yet, when I took our baby son David to the cafe, Polly never, ever swore. That behavior was very remarkable. It was as remarkable as when they had a funeral for a bird. Where else but the Yukon? The last time she sat in the Fokker, she was Olive Dame, wife of Alec Dame, one of the pilots who flew for George Simmons, Carcross-based Northern Airways in 1940. Alec flew for White Pass when he first came to the Yukon, she told me. He thought Northern Airways had better maintenance, so he hired on with them, and we moved to Carcross. He worked for them till he volunteered for Ferry Command, and we moved to Montreal. Not many know Ferry Command pilots were all volunteers. And you know, they even flew single-engine aircraft across the Atlantic. A long-ago sound interrupted her words. Above us was Fokker CFAAM heading north. Olive recognized it at once. Clark Seaborn said they weren't going to Dawson until Saturday. I guess they're just doing what we did in the old days, taking advantage of the weather, suggests Olive. Then she paused and quietly finished her story. I never celebrate St. Patrick's Day. That's the day Alec was killed test flying in a mosquito in 1943. We sat silently watching and listening as the Fokker disappeared over the northern horizon and the distinctive staccato of the engine faded. It was a sound we'll not hear in the Yukon ever again. After one-of-a-kind CFAAM flies south this week on a meandering journey through Burns Lake and Fort St. James, where it worked in the 1930s, then Calgary, and in a couple of years to its permanent home, the Western Canada Aviation Museum in Winnipeg. That museum owns the machine. Olive broke our mutual silence. We knew the sound of every airplane then, who was flying it, where they'd gone. You know, Northern Airways nose hangar is still in Carcross. Did you know that? Alec loved night flying, especially moonlit nights. When I asked him how dangerous the mountains were, he'd say, no two mountain peaks are alike. So it's easy. You always know where you are. Anyway, as soon as I heard the plane, I'd put the coffee on, get them something to eat. We agreed. They were more relaxed times until the war came along. People weren't in a hurry. They were more understanding, or maybe they didn't expect the perfect service people demand today. Alec flew Sally Rand around once. You know, the famous fan dancer. but I don't remember where or when. I do remember him coming home 2 days late one Christmas, looking like the cat who swallowed the canary. Weather forced them down, so they chose a lake they knew at the trapper's cabin nearby. The trapper was gone, so they made themselves at home. The next day, the weather was still bad, so they settled in for a long wait. Fortunately, they had a load of mail and turkeys, so they cooked themselves a Christmas turkey dinner with all the trimmings they could find. Just before sitting down, they noticed a box camera on a shelf and recorded the visit. A couple of days later, the weather broke. They left a clean cabin, you had to in those days, put the camera back on the shelf, but instead of a note, left only negatives on an undeveloped film and no other evidence they'd been there. Come spring, when the trapper had his winter film developed, he was puzzled by the photographs of these men he knew in his cabin, eating a turkey he didn't have. They left him wondering all summer before they told him. Million Dollar Valley? Yes, Alex and Herman Peterson flew USAF people into the valley. That's the United States Air Force. 1942, I think. It wasn't much of such a big deal to us, though they made it sound as if it was. You know, many of those American lend-lease pilots in World War II were from the southern states. They only had a few weeks training. Some had never seen snow and knew nothing about icing conditions and how to handle it. They were dropping like flies. I think that's what happened to those three. CFAAM became part of Yukon history in 1934 when George Simmons got an idea. He had the mail contract, carrying mail from Carcross to Outland, using boats and trucks in summer and dog teams in winter. He became intrigued with the idea of carrying mail year-round by air. He found and bought Fokker CFAAM from Consolidated Mining and Smelting Company in Trail, B.C. He and Bob Randall flew it home, put it to work, serving Dawson, Outland, Mayo, and anywhere else any Yukoner wanted to go. Despite losing two husbands to airplane crashes, Olive Torp, a racketeer of aviation anecdotes, worked all her life in the aviation industry, including Yukon Southern, then Canadian Pacific. Did you know there were 57 airlines involved in the founding of Yukon Southern, she asked? Not 57 directly, but if you trace the final founders back like a family tree, you end up with that many. Olive put it as well as I've heard it said, flying in the north then was like the gold rush at Dawson, a one-of-a-kind time. Something is gone that will never return. A team of dedicated volunteers brought us a gift from the past, and Olive Torp gave us a glimpse into bygone days when AAM and other Fokkers were the beginning of the Yukon's aviation frontier. From the recovery of the wreckage near Dawson City in 1974 by aviators Bob Cameron and Tony Haneluk to touchdown in Whitehorse, a remarkable story unfolded separate from the story of the AAM itself. The idea was nurtured, though almost 3 decades, by one of our own bush pilots and aviation historians, Bob Cameron. And here unfolds a story of dedication, tenacity, skill, and generosity. From a rusty steel frame to a canvas-covered work of art, lovingly restored over 18 years by artist and master craftsmen Clark Seaborn and Don McLean. Behind the scenes, cheering them on with money, material, labor, and encouragement, we find the Yukon government's Stay Another Day program, the Western Canadian Aviation Museum in Winnipeg, and many more unnamed players who deserve our praise and appreciation. Bob Cameron, though, deserves special recognition. He saw more than rusted steel wreckage. He had a dream. He saw his dream come true when CFAAM flew again. He nurtured it from beginning to end, from a rusty tubular steel frame to a magnificent flying machine, which flew into our hearts, deserves special recognition and praise from Yukoners past and present. A trip of the biggest Yukon hat we've got, Bob. The Fokker crew hasn't been alone on this incredible journey. A team from Black Spring Productions out of Calgary tagged along with them to film this incredible journey. Watch for the release of the documentary, perhaps this fall, and see it all, the story of this one airplane's fascinating journey through our land and the people who became part of its life, or was it part of their life? No matter. It sits well either way. We are in your debt, all of you, ladies and gentlemen.
Truly, tip of the hat to Bob Cameron.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
He is amazing.
What grit and perseverance.
I know. And he's still doing it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And yeah. So is Kyle and Sarah. There's a lot of people involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
So the next is a bunch of a whole list of the different incidences of this poor aircraft over its lifetime. Wow, that's quite something.
Yeah, I think it actually is a chronological of everything that was ever done when it was inspected, a bill of sale. What's noted here is October 12th, 1934, there was a bill of sale. The Consolidated Mining and Smelting Company of Canada Limited to Northern Airways Limited, $9,800.
Mm-hmm. So that's significant.
Yeah.
If you look at the price of the plane, it was just under $23,000.
Around there. So.
Yeah, so it just nearly half of it again.
After, it took me 6 months to write this article, actually 6 months to find all the information. It was, after a while, a labor of love. It just started, well, let me just write something. But as I got into it, I could almost feel the airplane talking to me. I was in Winnipeg one time, and I went into the museum, and I took this article to them and said, I wrote this. And they said, oh, we've seen it. We wondered who wrote it. And they let me get up inside. They took the barricade away and said, you need to sit in that airplane. And when I sat in it, you could almost feel the airplane talking.
I bet.
So I did have a lot of help writing it. And I'd like to know, those that did help me, I would like to express thank you to every single one of them. And I think every one of them needs to be recognized. Mm-hmm. I'd like to thank Clarence Tingley initially. He lives in Trail, B.C., and he was a dear friend of mine. I've known him since the 60s, and he and I would talk airplanes, and he would give me pictures that weren't allowed to be shown because some of them were court cases, still in litigation, decades later. He would tell me stories of many times when he was flying, and I knew the people that he was talking about. So I'd really like to thank Clarence for mentioning AAM and getting me on this track. I had heard of this historic plane a couple of years ago, but didn't really get the historic connection until Clarence mentioned it to me. His excitement was contagious, and when I got home, I knew I had to get something permanently written on AAM.
I don't think it was a very hard sell. I mean, I've only known you for a little while, and you seem to be extremely enthusiastic about history.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, here, what do you think of this? That sounds good. I'll pick that up.
Yeah. I also contacted Bob Cameron, as I do today. I am always getting hold of either Bob, now Kyle, and he was very helpful. Both of them, I don't know what I'd do without Bob and Kyle keeping me on track on anything aviation, and I truly, truly appreciate it. At the time, Bob was out of he was on his way out of the territory, but gave me free rein to put something together. Thank you, Bob, for entrusting me in gathering the history and putting it together as historical information. Another person is Murray Lundberg. His enthusiastic response to my request for the use of his website. To Doug Bell, who also answered my emails quickly and with so much enthusiasm, I knew I had chosen the right project to do. John Olofsson of Vernon, B.C., who kept sending more information and more when I thought there wasn't anything else to be found. Thanks to Terry Judge and Bob Cameron again for reading over the article and assuring the facts were correct. Also, their invaluable assistance made the accuracy in recording the history of CFAAM worth a placement in aviation history. Thank you to Greg Herrick, National Air Tour, for permission to use photos on the National Air Tour website. To the Yukon News and the White Horse Star, another thank you, for without your permission and the use of clippings and photographs from the newspaper, this record of AAM could not have been completed. There's a couple of memories here of people that wrote to me after I wrote it. Clarence Tingley. He said, good luck to you, and I'm sure your story will go over very well, and it is a fine tribute to a grand old lady. The next thing I have to tell you is regarding my short flight on AAM, which I was very fortunate to have had the chance to do. Of course, it was due to Bob Cameron's relationship with Clark Seaborn. It was a great experience for me. I will remember to the day I die. The first American to orbit the Earth was, of course, John Glenn. When AAM touched down and parked, and I got out, I was asked what I thought of the flight, and I just said, John Glenn, you can kiss my ass. Bob Cameron sure chuckled over that one. Doug Bell? He said, she's a fine lady. One neat coincidence happened during an interview with Yukon News on June 13, 2001, regarding the Fokker. We were sitting at a picnic table in the campground where they were staying, and as she was telling me about her flights in the airplane, we heard its distinct engine noise, and there it was, flying over us, heading north at the beginning of their Yukon tour. Another one comments, hello, Donna. This is from John Olofsson. I have read it a couple of times and just thoroughly enjoyed it. You've done a great job in the article, and it is amazing how much detail you have included in it. It must have taken you an incredible amount of time and effort to put it together. I have passed it around to many of my aviation friends, and I know they are enjoying it too. Speak of the devil, I just received a message from Earl Smith, who was one I sent it to, and lo and behold, he's an ex-Yukoner, and he receives the Mogison Telegraph regularly. He is presently in Brazil at a conference. Thanks, Donna, and I enjoyed helping in my small way. Another one, Jerry Carlson, he was with Civil Air Search and Rescue here in Whitehorse. Mm-hmm. Great job, what a beauty, and only in the Yukon, eh? I'm asking your permission to forward this in its entirety to my sister in southern Alberta and a few select friends. Please reply with your answer. Thanks again for this and all your hard work on this story. Signed, Jerry Carlson. Another one, I really enjoy the 29 Fokker aircraft one. I read every word. I remember that plane, of course, from my car cross days, 1943 to 1960. But some of these stories occurred long before that. George Simmons and Gordon Yardley were good friends, and after the road to Atlin went in, George gave Gordon Yardley the mail contract from Carcross to Atlin, B.C., delivery by truck from then on. It was in the days when I was postmistress there. Thanks and congratulations to all who were involved in compiling these two special editions, including you and Sharon and certainly Donna Clayson. Signed, Joyce Yardley, Nanaimo, former Yukoner. Gail LaRock said, hi, I forwarded a copy of your write-up of the Fokker to Murray Began, who was at a fly-in in Carcross yesterday. I thought he might enjoy the article. He is a 76-year-old pilot from Whitehorse and is still flying. I had a nice talk with him as I served food at the event. The children were taken up by Copa Flyers, and you should have seen the ear-to-ear smiles. It was a good day. That's it.
Isn't it fabulous that you've touched the heart of so many people?
Yes.
That wasn't your agenda.
I never thought of that.
No, you're a person who just does this out of the passion.
I was surprised when...
story.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe when people were messaging me and they appreciated it, and I... You know what? This is what this is all about. Let's get the history out, because you're going to touch somebody's heart in some way. And why not? That's what this is all about. Let's get the history out. And if there's memories that I can give to somebody and a smile to their face, that's all I ask. I am really happy with this journal. I was reached by the Canadian Aviation Historical Society. This is from winter 2016, and they said they were very interested in doing this article, but of course it's too many pages for the journal. So what they did was a condensed version, and or a brief version, and they actually put a picture of AAM along with, I believe, Schwatka Lake and Grey Mountain in the background. And I felt special. AAM reach their heart too.
Mm-hmm.
And they have several pictures in here as well, and they just did a fabulous job by condensing it and really didn't miss anything. They took 32 pages and made it into just a few with photos. So I really have to thank them for agreeing to, you know, to put this article in here and open a lot of people's eyes, because they didn't know about it.
No, and it made the front page. What is this, volume 54, I think it was?
It's volume 54, number 4.
Right.
And
that's winter 2016. So if anyone's looking for this, they can probably find a digital copy of it online.
I hope so.
And I'd like to take a picture of this. I'll use this for the cover
art. Yeah, sure.
On this particular podcast.
They sent this to me, so I was, you know, really happy that they did that. And so if anyone, you know, wants a copy of this in their collection, that's, yeah, hopefully they can find it.
Mm-hmm. That's a heck of a story. I'm glad you invited me out here. Thanks again, Donna.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your time. Appreciate you. You take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for dropping by today and picking up your weekly mail. If you've already subscribed to the podcast, big shout out to you. You are part of the team, and I appreciate your support. We're now looking at over 1,000 downloads and about 150 subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed, just go ahead and hit the button. All you'll get is a weekly notification sent to your device saying there's another podcast for you to download, and you can get that from wherever you get your podcasts from. And while you're there, you can leave a suggestion or a review if you'd like, and let me know what you'd like to hear next on the show. And remember, you can get in touch with me at myamazingyukonlife.com. You'll find show notes from today's show about the AAM Fokker, and also some pictures and web links related to each and every podcast that's completed. You're also invited to join me on My Amazing Yukon Life Facebook group. This is a place where we can get together and discuss some of our colorful Yukon Life adventures and our experiences that we've had. You can post your own pictures and comments and historic events of people and places, etc. And we can build upon each other's knowledge. And remember, I'm always on the lookout for willing people to interview who've had some authentic life experiences in the Yukon. And you can join me on the Facebook group. You'd be helping me make those connections and bringing those stories to our ears. I hope you enjoyed today's variety and its uniqueness and found a little humor, some inspiration, and perhaps a little life lesson nugget in the bottom of your gold pan. I'd like to leave you with a quote by Richard Moe from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It goes like this. Preservation is simply having the good sense to hold on to things that are well designed, that link us with our past in a meaningful way, and that have plenty of good use left in them. Until next time, take care and talk to you soon. Cheers.